Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we will be learning from Diane Fradshaw, Director at SMB New Energy Corporate Ventures. Diane, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
Very good. Thank you for this. I will walk you through what I think is an non-obvious path, hopefully, you know, inspiring some to think about corporate ventures in the long run. So I was born and raised in France in a very small place, and my life was all about horse trading. Anything else was really an inconvenience. And I was thinking of studying to be a vet. An accident kind of took me, of course, a horse riding accident. Everything is fine, don't worry, but kind of made me adjust course from this point. And I went for what I thought was the next best thing, which is at the time, agroscience engineering. And then realizing that I really wanted this for business, I went for a master's in general management, industrial management, and started my career in the food industry for Danone in Spain. I then later moved into the automotive industry for Visteon, the tier one supplier of Ford back in the days. And from there, created and raised and started my venture with my business partner before I joined SLB. That's 12 years ago. And with SLB, I worked for about 12 years in the core business, which is oil and gas services, before I joined the corporate venture team of the new energy division about 2 and 2.5 years ago. So if I look back, what took me here is a diversity of exposures. I lived and worked in, I think, 8 countries. I worked for about 4 different industries. And all of this today is very precious in what corporate venture, you know, requires from you.
Very nice. So maybe if you don't mind, I will ask about the horse riding, which was clearly your dream. Clearly, you have this mindset of being able to be to make pivots. And so maybe you can share a bit about why you think pivots are so important when you think about corporate venture.
Yeah, thank you for excellent question. There's a couple of ingredients to shifting and adjusting course. One is curiosity and a genuine interest for different things. And if you couple that with what I've been looking for throughout, I realize now is the steepest possible learning curve. Then regularly you evaluate where your options are and you think for yourself, does it satisfy me in terms of the competencies that I'm developing, the knowledge I'm gaining of different industries, of different functions? Am I satisfied with the environment I'm working in and the people that I interact with to deliver value and deliver impact? So there's also, I think, in any engineer, again, we're going back to the point on curiosity. There's a genuine curiosity to understand how things work. And for the new energy world of tomorrow, you know, we've got one of the greatest challenges to address, and I think it's a privilege to look at this. It feels that in this role, which I have to say is probably one of the best places to be in the company, it's a very privileged spot. Values, my values and my purpose and where I started perfectly align with what we're doing today, which I think is amazing. You rarely get this perfect match. So it's a very, very deep, and you know, we, if you look at SLB's kind of signature, it says a lot of things for a balanced planet. Okay, and if you look at SLB's new logo, it features the carbon curve, going to carbon neutral and then carbon negative. So have a look at our beautiful logo, and it's a great reminder of what drives us today. So when the whole world started to realize this time to decarbonize, SLB you know, started to put a lot of effort on decarbonizing the core of the business. So there's a lot of resources, a lot of focus going on this core business to ensure it's as clean as possible. And we support our clients in the same way. We decided to formalize the new energy business about 4 to 5 years ago. Of course, it comes with reconciliating, if you want, demands from different horizons. The immediate demand for the company, the shareholders, and every employee is to make sure that we generate cash and the company is profitable and carries on investing and serving the clients. The longer view is we need to prepare today for the energy systems of tomorrow, which requires a different set of skills, has got a different capital intensity profile at this stage, and all of that. Long-winded way to say what guides us is this compass of working for a balanced planet. And in fact, I think this is what really rallies both the core business and the new energy business of SLB towards the same aim. And that's very, very powerful indeed. Now, on the mission of the corporate venture group of SLB. So the corporate venture group, I don't know, has probably 10, 15 years of existence. And it was for a decent amount of time focused on the core oil and gas services business of ours. The thesis shifted at the time we formed this new energy division 4 or 5 years ago. And since we have, again, adjusted the thesis to domains I'll just list in a minute, the purpose, the role of this group is to create the portfolio of technologies for tomorrow. So we have a strategic mandate from the corporation to scout and find technologies that are highly differentiated and that we think we can help mature and then bring to scale. So for us, a successful investment, you know, if I can kind of boil it down to a couple of things, a successful investment is one that we help bring to a commercial level and then grow to a global scale or semi-global scale, depending on what the technology is. We do not measure our success in exits. This is, you know, not what we're trying to do. We, of course, need the financial returns that any venture outfit would expect, but really the mandate and the expectations are deeply strategic. And the domains are 100% aligned with the structure of our business, which is industrial decarbonization. So this is all things molecules. I'll start with carbon capture and storage. Growth storage, very close to our heart, given the subsurface expertise that we have. And then we've moved into the carbon capture space through a joint venture with Aker Carbon Capture this year, now renamed Capturi. In the hydrogen space, green hydrogen as well as blue hydrogen, for reasons you'll understand, and our exposure to gas through our customers. I'll name a couple: Genvia, a joint venture with the CEA in France, which is a solid oxide technology, and a recent participation in John Cockerill Hydrogen, which is an alkaline pressurized technology. This is for industrial decarbonization with a very clear ambition to address industries beyond oil and gas. Steel, cement, petrochems for the molecules scale. Then if I move on to what is more towards electrons, geothermal and long-duration energy storage. So again, geothermal, working on an adjacency that we have and understanding the drilling capabilities and the modeling that we have, and then addressing the power sector. And last but not least, critical minerals. So far, in portfolio, a direct lithium extraction technology that we have successfully commissioned in Nevada earlier this year, and that is commercial. So these are the three domains: molecules, electrons, minerals. And again, the mandate is to build a portfolio of solutions for our clients with a view to decarbonize their operations.
Which is really deep tech. I mean, molecules, electrons, minerals, and it's quite wide. Actually, it's very, very wide topics.
And in fact, clean technologies, for those that I have mentioned, are challenging a number of fronts. Yeah, energy sovereignty, techno-economics, all of the above. So it does take a lot of collaboration to de-risk those propositions. We are very clear on the expertise that we can bring and the difference it can make to technology maturation, given the expertise we have in-house. We're also very clear on the pieces that we need to partner for.
So I think what comes across is, you said you don't know why you got into the CVC, but I think your profile across multiple industries, across big companies like Danone and Visteon, starting your own venture, passionate about the topics, plus in the company for a while, I think that's why you were picked to join the CVC. My question to you is, as you engage with entrepreneurs, how much of your profile of working with big companies, which has a global scale, and having started your own venture with all the risks that comes with it, how much of that helps you to empathize with entrepreneurs and engage with them?
I appreciate this question. In fact, you're touching something that is very dear to me. Since I had my own entrepreneurial journey, I really made sure that in every posting, every location that I worked in, I had a deep connection with the local entrepreneurial ecosystem. There's many ways to do this. You know, in every conversation with any entrepreneur comes in terms of, you know, substance and what to do in the job. On a more personal basis, being an entrepreneur is a very lonely thing. It's a very testing journey. It has its very, 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 very highs and very, very lows. And I've certainly learned to surround myself to ensure that during the lows, you've got something lifting you up. During the highs, you can share that with your community. And I take pride into being there for those entrepreneurs when they need it. It's not always about the business. There are great people behind all of these businesses. And I take this part of my responsibility to be attentive to this as well.
Okay, so now I know that I got the real answer to how did you get into the corporate venture here. So let's pick a few words you mentioned. So earlier on, you talked about curiosity. You also talked about frugality. Tell me how these two concepts, which are quite different, but which you want to see in entrepreneurs, how do you assess the project of an entrepreneur when they come to you? And how do you test for something so intangible, especially when meeting an entrepreneur, on curiosity and frugality?
I think we need to start with the hardcore scientific filters here. So as far as SLB Corporate Venture operates, again, strategic thesis is very clear. And, you know, we really focus most of our efforts within those boundaries. So we venture and out of, again, with curiosity, we try and test things out there, but really we are very deliberate about the heart of thesis. Second, there's a process by which a consensus on the technology potential needs to be there. So there's a broad team within the company that conducts due diligence on the technical front to ensure that, yes, we understand where the technology is at, we look at the testing, data that is available, and you have the credentials of the team. What is their background training? What have they done before that might be relevant for the future? I'm thinking any technology required. And then we get into the softer aspects. I think a few indications of a founder personality. One is how the founder talks about the future. And it's a very sweet blend, or in my mind, should be a very sweet blend of ambition and realism. I particularly like, that's very personal, but I like to see a founder with amazing ambition, but yet, you know, not all trees grow up to the sky, right? And so a founder that is clear about what the company needs and when and why and at which pace it might develop is a strong indication of the resilience of the person and how prepared they are to endure what is usually a very long and capital-intensive journey.
I love that question. That's a golden nugget. How do they talk about the future? And you're right, you want a clear dream, but you want to have a sense of how it's going to be executed towards global scale. But I think it's back to how do you build trust? And clearly you want to have people who resonate with you, probably have the same values, the same dream or direction. What would be the advice to entrepreneurs listening on how do you engage with a VC or a CVC and you build trust? I think that one is not obvious.
First, it's a people business. It's a people business, no matter how deep the technology, no matter how mature, immature, how disruptive. In the end, it's a people business. You can have the best technology ever. And if alignment on the outcomes is not there, it's a very difficult journey. So I would encourage any founder to reach out in a very genuine, disinterested way, meaning that a good conversation, no matter where it leads, should surface some very useful things. More connections, a view on the technology, some new ideas, some guidance. It's a mix. So I would encourage to really have conversations beyond the sole need of raising capital.
Mm-hmm.
Way before that, just after that, throughout. And again, how to build trust, a couple of thoughts. One is we're very, very keen to engage regardless of the stage of the company. Sometimes I hear, oh, but we've just raised. I'm like, great. Best time ever to engage because you're relaxed. You've got funds. We can get to know each other without this pressure, without this.
That's the golden nugget. That's the golden nugget. Yep. Very nice. And so maybe touch on something which is so important, happens so often, which is when you have to say no. Do you have any best practice or process on how you end up saying no to even something you want to deep dive, you really like the entrepreneur, but you can't invest in everything. Like you said, there is a very high barrier for you to invest. So any best practice or tips you want to share about how do you say no?
Yes. It's a tough one, right? It's so much easier, so much nicer to say yes. But it comes with the territory and it comes with the integrity that we hold ourselves accountable to in everything we do. And so at each phase of the process, we say, look, we're on this call. We'd really like to know more about the technology. Then step two is, okay, there's really something there potentially, but we need, you know, consensus on the technical side in order to get overexcited about it. So we look under the hood, then there's, you know, due diligence or deeper conversations. And at this point, we're quite forthcoming with what we think is very strong, what we think might be challenges, either in the scale up or whatever the aspect might be. And so somehow there's a continuum in the conversation that doesn't take the founder by surprise. And so if the outcome is yes, great. If the outcome is maybe it's okay. By the way, Nicolas, we're also very humble. It's rarely a dry no, because taking a technology to a certain stage, raising funds for it, or you know, socializing the technology in order to raise funds later is a proof that there is something there. It might be a matter of time. It might be a matter of finding the right use case. It might be a matter, you know, founding team changes. And so it's nearly impossible to say no forever. It might be, look, this is what's on our mind. Can you keep us updated and let us know how this is going? And we generally want to keep in touch because shifting and surprising is something that entrepreneurs do a lot. So this is how we do it.
And I think it's also maybe a consequence of you being able to invest at early stage. So now I want to double click on the equity and in kind. But here it sounds like this is a systematic process where if you decide to invest, it's not just capital. You're going to plan to help them somehow to de-risk technology or accelerate. Can you talk about first the process of getting buy-in? Because if you do in kind, you need to have the team willing to give and to engage. How do you ensure alignment?
Okay. It's a very, very key question, and it's the very essence of how we operate at SLB. First, we start with strategies and what the business line sees a certain time horizon on the market. And from there, we back to today and examine the technology, thinking, how might it serve this upcoming market? What might be the pace? So that's the first thing, which means we've got a deep, strong alignment on this to start with. Second, we work together from the onset, meaning we scout, and then we boil down the pipeline to a few key elements, we think, and bring the business line very early in the process. The journey, the relationship making and due diligence journey is something very precious to understand what technology and the company might become in scale later on. And it's very difficult to summarize and hand over this journey to the business if they've not been on board to start with. And then, it's a bit of a matchmaking thing. There's the equity piece, and we craft and agree on a deal that commits both organizations in a balanced way. So with the business, in fact, it is, like you said, the business committing the resources, we agree very formally on how we're going to resource the venture beyond the equity. It can be seconding people. It can be given access to our labs or R&D centers. However, the way we craft our arrangements is made in a way that does not constrain the venture. What we do not want is to limit the company in what it can do, in what market it can reach, in what domains it can address, in what clients it can serve. And so, yes, we build this for business purposes and we want access to the technology, but then we're also very mindful of ensuring that there's no dependency on the venture towards SLB. It has to be a symbiotic relationship, unconstrained symbiotic relationship.
So let me ask maybe a non-intuitive question, but when you go to the investment committee, it must be so easy. You find a startup that meets the business line requirements and they are here to say, yes, I'm willing to commit. How difficult is the investment committee for you?
Well, this is you're being cheeky here, and I like it. Let me put it this way. Would we not bring on board all of the key stakeholders, business, mothership, etc., ahead of time, we would have no chance of getting anything. That's a priori, because that's a qualifier.
Yeah.
But that's not a guarantee. I think of the corporate venture group as this young disruptor. If you think of SLB Schlumberger, brothers who founded this company 100 years ago, Marcel and Conrad. This company has been hugely successful. It's 100 years old in a couple of years. And it has superior expertise in subsurface, all things subsurface. Understands its clients like no one else does. The 100 years of history has been a history of taking risk out of the equation. The typical question we get is, what does this equity arrangement and in-kind arrangement give you that a commercial arrangement wouldn't?
That's what I thought would be the question.
Yes. Yeah. That's the one we get 100% of the time. So you can preempt it. It's not as, I think the toughest questions stem from circumstances and the sentiment around the market. Think about hydrogen today, challenged on many fronts, for a number of very reasonable reasons. Bringing a hydrogen investment in this particular context today is, maybe a multiplier on the challenge to get it across. It's not to say it won't, but I think the kind of circumstantial information is kind of steeping up the yes.
It needs extra courage and vision.
Yes, it does. A lot of conviction and a lot of stakeholder management to bring people on board with your own conviction.
So for my final question in the last 3 minutes, and for the entrepreneurs, but also the VCs and CVCs listening, what are you the most excited in investing in the next 18 months? so that they know to reach out to you.
Yeah, thank you, Nicolas. I always like looking forward because, you know, you can dream a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think we're very keen on advancing our, you know, our fundamentals, being all things to decarbonize, the steel industry, the petrochems, the cement industry, and the power industry.
Yeah.
Of course, we've got focus on carbon capture, hydrogen generation, and not to forget critical minerals. What really strikes me these days is the need for baseload power is immense.
Mm-hmm.
And the ambition that the world has, I can speak for the UK where I'm based, there's a great deal of ambition in the renewable space in terms of deployment, which, you know, is very challenging from a margin perspective for the project developer and the technology owners. Plus, it challenges the grid. You've talked about the grid when we started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this intermittency challenges. So plenty of opportunity there for sure. It's not to minimize this in any way. But baseload, I think we'll have quite a few surprises on the baseload side of things. Yes, there is, of course, gas. But then, you know, gas those days, we're working on really trying to substitute with other things. So anything baseload and grids and monetizing electrons,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, when we have a demand versus a generation mismatch, are things we, you know, I'm certainly keen on keeping an eye on, see how things develop moving forward.
And thank you so much for your time today and sharing insights and your golden nuggets. And I think this model of very strong strategic fit that comes with an on-set alignment with a business group and all the way to that superpower you give to the portfolio companies, I think is really remarkable. So thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Nicolas. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, and I hope that the audience will as well. I'm certainly very open to any conversation as you will have picked up.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.